I welcome councillors, management and members of the public in attendance to the City of Melbourne. We respectfully acknowledge that we are meeting on the traditional land of the Kulin Nation. This place is now known by the name of Melbourne. Melbourne is one of the great multicultural cities of the world and a significant meeting place for the Kulin Nation. Melbourne has always been an important meeting place and a location for events of social, educational, sporting and cultural significance. I take this opportunity to notify members of the public that this meeting is being recorded and will be made available on the City of Melbourne website before close of business tomorrow. The unconfirmed minutes of this meeting will also be available from the City of Melbourne's website as soon as practical. Should you have any queries relating to the conduct of the meeting, the documentation of the submission process, please speak with a member of the Council Business Team after the meeting. I request that all mobile phones be turned off for the duration of the meeting. The agenda comprises of 5 reports from management, 3 items of general business. An apology has been received from Lord Mayor Robert Doyle. If any councillor, disclosure of conflicts of interest, if any councillor has either a direct or indirect interest as defined by the Local Government Act 1989 in relation to a matter to be considered by the committee, please disclose the type and nature of your interest prior to the consideration of the item. Confirmation of the minutes of the previous meeting. I call on a councillor to move a resolution adopting the minutes of open meeting number 81, held on Tuesday the 17th of May 2016. I call on a councillor to second that motion. Councillor Oak, I will now put the motion.
So I need a mover.
A mover, thank you. Did I get
Councillor Oak, move it, I'll second it.
Thank you. I will now put the motion to the vote. All those in favour of the motion, raise your hands, which you have, and that has been passed unanimously. I ask councillors whether there are any matters arising from the minutes of the previous meeting. At 3 p.m. today, the following submissions have been received in accordance with the Council's Conduct of Meeting Laws 2010. In relation to Agenda Item 6.3, Draft Urban Ecology and Biodiversity Strategy, request to speak, Chris Thrum, Tony Penner, South Bank Residents Association. Items of correspondence, Chris Thrum and Tony Penner, South Bank Residents Association. In relation to Agenda Item 7.1, Notice of Motion, Councillor Cathy Oak, Owners Corporation and Related Legislation. Request to speak, Paul Salter, President of the Victorian Industry Association, and also correspondence from Paul Salter. In relation to Agenda Item 7.2, Notice of Motion, Councillor Mayne, Melbourne International Flower and Garden Show, Renewal of Licence. Request to speak is John Wickard for the Carlton Residents Association. Items of correspondence from John Wickard for the Carlton Residents Association, Yolanda Lenardi and Julian Bell, Secretary, Protest of Public Lands Victoria. If there are any other members of the public who have requested to address the committee, whose names I have not included in the list, please say so. Yes, sir. And what was the item number?
7.1.
Did you get that, ma'am? Yeah. Oh, I haven't got it, actually. Advise submitters that you will be invited to address the committee at the time the relevant agenda item is considered. You will have 3 minutes to address the committee. It is the intention of the committee to adhere to this three-minute time. And to assist you, please refer to the counter on the wall. Beeps will sound at the completion of 2 minutes, signalling you have 1 minute remaining to conclude your address. Another beep will sound to signal the time allocated to you. You have finished. In accordance with the Council Resolution of 26 March 2013, a 15-minute period will be provided at the beginning and at the end of this meeting for members of the public to ask questions. Questions should not be greater than 90 seconds in duration, and I remind members of the public this is not time to make submissions. Submitters will be invited to address the committee at the time the relevant agenda item is considered. I now invite questions from the members of the public. Would you please raise your hand if you would like to ask a question and state your full name? Please, Tony, would you like to come forward?
Thank you. Deputy Lord Mayor, councillors,
I've got two questions, unrelated. On the 7th of October 2014, at this meeting, Southbank Residents Group made a submission to a ministerial referral for 248 to 250 Sturt Street, rejecting the atrocious 40-storey plan. The application was rejected by the Minister and subsequently referred to VCAT by the applicant. We followed the outcome closely, as we usually do. There were then confidential negotiations between the applicant and the City of Melbourne, leading to a conditional planning approval being issued for a 16-storey development. Why weren't we, the residents, informed? It seems like there has been a deal done behind closed doors. That's not the right message for this council to be sending its residents. Residents don't have notice rights, and we rely on the Future Melbourne Committee meeting as our point of notice. It's our opportunity to have a say because the state government deprives us of our voice. This council knows that Southbank residents are passionate about planning in their neighbourhood, and from what I have seen of the approved application, there are a number of questionable aspects which makes me wonder how it was approved in the first place, possibly rushed through. It's unacceptable. Why wasn't this called in?
Councillor Rong, would you like to answer the question, please?
Yes, Acting Lord Mayor. Thank you for the question. It was raised to me recently too by Southbank News. I'm not sure whether it's right term to say that there was confidential behind the doors negotiation. The matter was brought up to VCAT, which organised a mediation meeting, and in that meeting, a position was reached.
I say confidential because VCAT said to us it was confidential when we tried to get the findings. That's
yeah, because
why I said confidential.
In the sense that confidential is because it's all the related parties, the officers from the council, from the developers, and also VCAT presided over those what they call compulsory mediation meetings. The outcome, I have to say that we had a briefing note from officers what happened with the VCAT decision, which I acknowledge that it doesn't go back to the South Bend residents or those people who objected, who raised concerns with the original application. I've asked officers to look at that notification process to close the loop, per se. It doesn't come back to council because it's a VCAT ruling, which means that it's not even a delegated position. Now, it's in the sense that if it comes back to Future Melbourne, there's nothing to debate because we can't even change anything in there.
But it was a ministerial referral, not a council referral.
But no, once after the decision's made, I think after the decision was made by VCAT, it actually dropped below 25,000 square metres. Mm. You know, but because it's a VCAT decision, coming back to Future Melbourne does not achieve anything.
Well, it gives us a say. That's what it achieves.
No, actually, you can have a say, but we can't change a VCAT decision here. So the process that I've mentioned before is to ask officers to look at how the closing of the loop, that once these decisions are made, how it gets back out into the community to ensure that people are aware of that. But in terms of the actual process which VCAT manages, we don't have a say in it.
And I understand that.
Okay.
This could happen again and again and again, and
that's
we're devoid of a say. We've got
Tony, your second question, please.
Second question, much shorter. In 2014, there was an extensive consultation on the C208 developer contribution plan. In November 2014, the panel report was not favourable and raised a number of questions, particularly around the methodology of the calculations, etc. What is the latest on C208? And if it wasn't implemented, what's next? What's the impact of that? I haven't seen much of that for some time now.
Councillor Ong or Councillor?
I think it's a very useful question. I can't answer that, but I can probably ask officers who might be able to provide an update.
Councillor Leppard feels he could answer the question.
So the planning scheme amendment wasn't proceeded with by the City of Melbourne, as you identified. We decided not to pursue it. The next step is that the Arden-Macaulay framework, which the City of Melbourne is participating with the state government and its various departments and agencies to look at the built form reviews in that area, as well as a whole lot of other issues, such as open space, such as what should happen after C208. That is where we are trialling the development of a development contributions scheme that can follow C208. That's still in progress. We are not yet in a position to announce where that is up to, but once we've got a trial position that the state government thinks is going to work there, we can then look at seeing if that's applicable to our other urban renewal areas in South Bank and City North. But the first step is to see if this pilot, if you like, in Arden-Macaulay is going to come off, and there'll be more news on that in the next month or two to come.
We were taking the contributions in the applications before. Are we still collecting those or not?
Open space, yes.
Oh, open space contributions, yeah.
Not what we call the equivalent of the old C208, which we're basically told is not going to happen.
Yeah, cool. Thank you.
Thank you, Tony. Are there any further questions from members of the public? Yes, could you please stand and state your name? Would you like to come to the microphone, please?
Hi, thank you. My name's Lisa Peterson. I am a member of your Homelessness Advisory Committee. I'm on the front cover of your Homelessness Strategic Plan, and I am the peer educator who has been supporting the homeless people over in City Square. We had compliance orders come in today and tell people to move on. Everybody's back. There's nowhere for them to go. In your strat plan, you've got provision for safe date night spaces, as well as for pathways out of homelessness through training and education. We've asked for a safe space and our own voice. I'd like to know from council, where do you expect people to go and what are you going to do about this?
Thank you. Councillor Foster, would you like to answer?
Lisa, thanks for your question. Before I go to the answer, though, I want to thank you for the work that you've been doing in the City Square and your work on our advisory committee. Can I just say that you have been one of the best resources that we've had lately in terms of communicating with the homeless community and understanding what the needs are. You've been the voice of reason, so thank you very much for your contribution that I trust will be ongoing. In terms of answering the question, Lisa, I think you will know, but it probably needs to be said anyway. There is no simple answer. When we get concerns from traders and concerns from the community, obviously we're expected to act on those, but that's not in ignorance in any way to the concerns of the homeless community. And I know you've got some friends here. Welcome to your friends here tonight as well. Thank you for taking the time to come in and hear directly from us, because we don't see that all that often, and can I say that you are welcome any time at any of these open meetings. When we do try and deal with the homeless problem, again, Lisa, I know as you're aware, we do try to do it in a way that doesn't further disadvantage a community that is already more disadvantaged than most of us. Again, with no easy answers available to us, what I can tell you, and again, you'll have to take this in the spirit I'm putting it, but there are a couple of initiatives on foot at the moment. We are talking to a couple of local organisations that will have something to offer soon. That's all I can say at this stage. We are still working through that, but don't think for a moment that all we will be doing is constantly moving people on. We are working at the sorts of things that you've lifted out of the homelessness strategy, and that's why they're in there.
Okay, great. Thank you. We look forward to working together further.
Thank you, Lisa. Are there any further questions from the members of the public? All right, I will continue with the meeting. I now call on Councillor Ong. There are the reports from management to assume the role of the chair of the meeting in relation to planning.
Thank you, Acting Lord Mayor. We have two reports from management for consideration under the planning portfolio tonight, which is significantly less than the normal, which is good. Agenda item 6.1, the planning scheme amendment C259, which is an application of DDO 32 over 120 to 162 Capel Street and 135 to 159 Peel Street in North Melbourne. Would councillors like a presentation on this agenda item? Nope. On that note, I'm happy to move what's been put up on the screen as the recommendation. I call on the councillor to second that, Councillor Leppard. There's not a lot to say about this. I guess the activity was to complete the process that we did in this C-162 in that sense that when we did City North, and we were brought to our attention that we actually didn't cover these two properties, and which we are now doing it. And because there are no submissions, we don't have to go to a panel, and then the process is reasonably quick. So if we tick it off tonight, we'll just go to the Minister for approval and gazetting. So I highly recommend councillors to support this. Councillor Leppett.
Thank you, Chair, as do I. This concludes the process I commissioned a little over 2 years ago, and I want to thank the residents of North Melbourne who, first of all, identified the oversight in the implementation of the City North Structure Plan, where this DDO and the height limit wasn't applied in an area where we did intend it to be applied. That work has progressed and there have been no submissions to the planning scheme amendment. So it's always nice to not have to send an amendment off to the planning panel for further consideration and to simply adopt it. This is the second last step. The council will presumably adopt this at its meeting at the end of the month. But thank you again to all of those residents who have been involved.
Any further speakers from councillors, for or against? If not, I'll put it to the vote. All those in favour, please raise your hands. I declare it carried unanimously. Next agenda item is agenda item 6.2, which is planning permit applications TP2016-241, which covers 92 to 102 and 104 to 108 Hawke Street in West Melbourne. Would councillors like a presentation on this item? Nope. I'll move to the recommendation and Councillor Wood second it. Pretty straightforward. It's a council application that we've had previously to look at expanding the park, the open space up there in West Melbourne. And it's just procedural, and I'm happy to not add further to the discussion. Councillor Wood.
Thank you, Chair. I agree. We're going to go from 1,000 square metres to over 1,800 square metres of open space, so extinguishing the old reserve boundaries for a much larger open space is something that I have great delight in supporting. It'll be great to see this project come to full fruition.
But to this agenda item? Councillor Oak.
No, they're suggesting I should support it. I know, but I say the same thing every time this comes up, and that but it's exciting that we have worked for a long time with the community in identifying a solution to the too small park for kids and dogs, rather than saying, the original advice was we can't have kids and dogs, end of story, but we went back to the drawing board and thought, no, actually, let's come up with a solution. It's a long and complicated solution involving taking over roads, houses, expanding boundaries, but hey, it's the Innovation Council, right? So, it's a long process. We've come up with a solution. It's, maybe bigger than what we thought it might end up being, which is exciting. So I thank everyone that's been involved because this really has been a whole of council response to the need for greater open space in our municipality, and it's exciting that we are taking over more bitumen for more parks and where dogs and kids and others can and obviously get the benefits of open space in their community.
Thank you, Councillor Oak. If there are no further speakers, what I'll do is just follow up. I mean, I thought it was appropriate that Councillor Oak spoke about this because going back to 2010 or thereabouts, where, as I say, Councillor Oak and former Councillor Kenneth were heavily involved in these discussions between the families with babies and the people with dogs, which resulted in a situation where Council had to look at finding a solution for coexistence peacefully, which resulted in us taking over part of the bitumen in the first place. And then the opportunity arose to purchase the property next to the site, which I congratulate officers for bringing that idea to us, which now gives us a sufficiently large enough space for all in that area to enjoy peacefully. And that means peace for council as well. Well done. I put it to the vote. All those in favour, raise your hands. I declare it carried unanimously. I'm happy now to pass this on to Councillor Wood.
Thanks, Councillor Ong. Very relaxed night for you. There are three reports from management for consideration under the environment portfolio. The first one is agenda item 6.3, the draft urban ecology and biodiversity strategy. Council like a presentation on this item? If not, I will now call on Chris Thrum, who has requested the opportunity to address the committee. Chris, you've got 3 minutes. You know the drill well.
Thank you, Councillor Wood, councillors, men and women of Old Melbourne Town. I'd like to applaud and congratulate the council officers and the citizens involved in the writing of this report, because I'd encourage everyone in this room to have a look at this report, because it is a great report, phenomenal report in terms of how to protect Melbourne's biodiversity going into the 21st century. Like we're talking about the land, the water, the air, all the creatures, great and small, in the sort of ecosystem. Last year, Councillor Wood and Councillor Oak had the good fortune to go to Paris, and they showed local leadership by going there and representing Melbourne at an important climate conference. And just last weekend, or the weekend before, on the 27th and the 28th of May, and Thursday the 3rd of June, Paris received about three times more than its monthly rainfall in May in the space of a few days. And the Louvre, where they store their collection, in 2002 they had an assessment which stated that, like, we've stored the collection, you'll never have to worry about flooding. And, well, they had to put the call out to volunteers and friends of the Louvre to come and help us, because we're about to get inundated here. So if people say that the climate's not changing, I beg to differ. Back to the report, the three principles of the report are really crucial and important in terms of, like, it helps to focus on the fact that connecting the citizens to nature, sort of creating a resilient ecosystem, and showing local and global leadership. In terms of, like, creating a resilient ecosystem, back in the 19th century, the state government botanist Ferdinand Mueller, he sent eucalypt seedlings all around the globe, because he believed that eucalypts were a resilient species and that they would be able to adapt and make a better environment for communities around the world. So this report furthers that tradition of Mueller's sort of leadership. It's important too that City of Melbourne sort of encourages and collaborates with researchers, say from the University of Melbourne, other tertiary institutions, even undergraduate students. The report's great too. It respects the Kulin Nation, it respects the Wurundjeri in a deep manner, such as like the resilient 100 cities do as well. So in conclusion, I would encourage councillors to approve the continuation of the recommendations and findings of this report, and I'd encourage all the citizens to read this report. It's a great report.
Thanks, Chris. And thanks for your written submission as well. Any questions for Chris? Chris, you may take a seat. I now call on Tony Penner, who's requested the right to speak. Tony, you know the drill too. 3 minutes.
Indeed. Deputy Lord Mayor, councillors, Tony Penner, Southbank Residents Association. Southbank Residents Association commends the City of Melbourne and its officers for this most important draft strategy for urban ecology and biodiversity. This will go some way to assisting the city with managing and maintaining its green space, trees, plants and waterways, and such a strategy is critical. We are all aware of the benefits of green space, and so are the residents of Southbank. In fact, green space and trees is something that is almost non-existent in Southbank. While we acknowledge that there are works in the pipeline for Southbank Boulevard and to a lesser degree City Road, we would like to see this council be more active with addressing the shortfall of such space, green and trees, so that we have a decent amount of open space that this strategy can in fact apply to. In fact, talking of City Road, nothing has even been allocated in the 2016-17 budget for City Road. Is this another project that we're just going to hear is coming and going and the next year? We sincerely ask that this council can develop a plan to address the shortfall of green space and trees and the biodiversity in general of Southbank to try and bring it that little bit closer to the 20 square metres per resident. And then this strategy might have something to work with in Southbank. Thank you.
Thanks, Tony. Any questions for Tony? I think there might be a qualification on that one, but we'll leave it to another time. There is money for City Road. Thanks, Tony. I now call on a councillor to move a motion. Councillor Oak, seconded. Councillor Wood, Councillor Oak.
Thank you, Councillor Wood. I thank our submitters for presenting on the importance of this draft strategy, and I don't need to do a preamble on the importance of nature in our city, although maybe I will, but it's important draft. It does say draft, but really a lot of work has already gone into this, and ultimately this is about putting it out for a final check balance. You know, have we got our targets right? Have we got our actions right? Do the actions meet the ambition of the strategy? And also, do we have the right evidence to act on those, you know, on those items? And you know, so our experts in our community, our residents, our visitors, the university precinct, you know, by going out with this draft, hopefully they'll come back and say, yeah, we've got it right, or actually, you know, we could do more. You know, have we got it? Are there other actions that we can do? I know that a lot of work has happened since we started on this strategy that might inform other actions. Otherwise, I think that it's a pretty impressive draft, and surely the feedback will be that it's, as a first urban ecology strategy for the City of Melbourne, it's an excellent piece of work. As I said already, it's already been informed by a huge number of collaborations, not only through Participate Melbourne, through public forums, a lot of work with our universities and the museum, RQ in particular, who is a principal author on this document, is an excellent piece of work, and then worked with other urban ecologists in our city. Importantly, I want to thank our staff who have been involved in this. Again, it's been many years, but you know, Tiffany and Kelly and Yvonne and Ian, and I know there are others, but been fairly resourceful. It's been very lacking in budget, this particular strategy. No matter how many times I've got it as an action in our annual plan, there was very limited budget assigned to it, and I think they've been incredibly resourceful getting the data that we needed to underpin the strategy, but also their intelligence, obviously, in contributing themselves. But so I'd like to thank them very much so. But it does respond to a key principle of our urban forest strategy, biodiversity. It's ultimately, you know, we don't have a resilient forest if we don't have a healthy ecosystem, and we don't have healthy biodiversity. But as we've had many conversations on this, you know, we can't set a strategy if we don't know what's here, and the data is often quite poor when it comes to ecology in cities. And so we've had to do a lot of work to understand what is here. But this underpins our resilience strategy, our climate adaptation strategy, have a healthy ecosystem. Again, we have healthy people, we have a healthy city. It's really important. And so I like that this talks about a larger sum of money in the first year, you know, to the strategy and money for engagement afterwards. But as we've seen in the discussions in this document, you can see that the community does want us to protect and enhance what we have, but also to understand nature, you know, as it was and as it could be. And it's important that we do that. This strategy also talks about, you know, what other evidence do we need, what other data do we need to respond, and also how can we use our leadership position to learn not only from other cities, but also how we can contribute to influencing others to act on urban ecology. I like that the emblem has made it into the strategy. Another one of my, I was told it was a bit of a harebrained idea about an emblem for the City of Melbourne, but I understood at the time, unless we actually know what emblem it could be, no point in having an emblem competition. So I understand that through the Bio Blitz, we've collected a lot of great data, we understand a lot more, and so it can go hand in hand with other work that we're doing. But the emblem idea has made it in there, so I'm excited about that. And I'm not sure which one we'd vote for yet, but I think it's good to show that we've got an engaged community, that we don't have to talk to them so much about the importance of nature. We can now ask them which ones we really want to represent, what that could be. And then I just think that we really should be proud. I was at an urban ecology workshop last week, and the audience was asked, well, you know, what does urban ecology mean? And I think that the City of Melbourne really has got it right. We're working with the traditional owners. We're understanding what the traditional connections to country were all about and how we can use that. We're working with our experts, not only internally but externally, about what biodiversity means in the city right now. But we're also understanding that the climate is changing, that the city of the future is changing, and what does that mean to nature and what can we do to help and enhance that. So I think that we really have urban ecology right at the City of Melbourne. I should be proud of that, but and our first strategy will help us to understand it better. So I commend the draft strategy and look forward to the final one coming back.
Thanks, Councillor Oak. And obviously a whole heap of consultation has gone into this to get it to this stage, and also acknowledge Councillor Oak's work in pushing for this over, I think it's about 7 years now, Councillor Oak. So great work by officers, but acknowledging the personal push from Councillor Oak to get this to where it is. Obviously releasing it to community consultation, we want to keep those discussions going. I think the one about the emblem is really good. It's already capturing people's attention. I've put in a vote for a micro bat, but I'm sort of being swayed to the pobble bonk at the moment. So have a think about what your emblem might be for the City of Melbourne. And I think too, the citizen science and how to get people involved in these conversations is really the important part of this. The other thing is too is having hard targets. So similar to the urban forest strategy success, the open space strategy success, and the ongoing implementation is having some defined targets. So I think the target to increase the mid-storey by 20% is a tangible target that we can measure against and see the success of this strategy over time. It builds, I think, as Councillor Oak touched on, the partnerships and the research partnerships that we've got, sort of doing quite a lot with not much in terms of funding, but the results are pretty good. I think BioBlitz has been a real revelation in terms of getting that citizen science to the next level as well. So I'm really looking forward to this going out. I think the community consultation as part of this, the sort of social learning that's going on, is just as important as perhaps the physical outcomes of the strategy itself. So very happy to endorse this and see it go out for further consultation. Any speakers against pobble bonks or micro bats? Any other speakers for? Councillor Ong.
Thank you, Chair. I'd like to commend, firstly, the past and the current chairs of the environment portfolios for bringing it to us this, and also the officers have been doing all the work on this. Just things do take a number of years to happen, but it does happen. And Tony, things will happen, City Road, okay? my comment is that this is another piece of the jigsaw that forms the City of Melbourne's livability index. And I think it's very important. You know, over the years, you know, when I look at the work that the previous council and this council has done, piece by piece we have added in to make the city even greater. And this is another piece of it. You know, as the chair of planning, you know, people always talk about buildings. In fact, you know, buildings are just buildings. It's what's around it and what's at the ground level and what's been the buildings are designed and used, and the greening that's added onto it, it's what's adding to the city's livability. Because 25 years ago, we didn't have that many people in the city. It's changed a lot, and it will continue to change according to the projections that our researchers have done. So do something now rather than do something later, and I think it's great that this comes in. And if you look at the community consultation part of the report on page 15, where, you know, 200 of members have face-to-face in these forums, and with over 3,300 people getting online. And that diagram, what are the important things? Well-being. I mean, it speaks for itself. You know, we all say we look after the environment, but the biggest, largest word there is well-being. Because in the end, all of those add up together to make sure that this city continues to be good for people to live in and work in and visit and use the city. So I think that tells me a lot about what this leads to. And it's not about just looking after the trees or looking after the rivers, but it's about, in the end, it's the well-being of everyone and everything that lives in this city. So I think this report is really important in that sense. And I commend all those who have contributed to it. I look forward to the final one after the consultation process.
Thanks, Councillor Ong. Any other speakers? Councillor Leppett.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for your work on this. Can I add my thanks of Councillor Ong to Councillor Oak? Bit more than 7 years by my count, very long period of time, but it's great to see that the first draft strategy is here after an incredible amount of work over a very long period of time, and it's good to see the pet projects like the emblem in there as well. Following on from what Councillor Ong said, we do have an increasing challenge in the City of Melbourne, as is identified in the strategy, about the rapid densification in the private realm in particular. Our planning controls aren't geared to thinking about biodiversity as the primary issue when looking at development in the inner city. And whilst we are, I think, very, very good managers of public open space and our park designs are now really best practice when it comes to consideration of biodiversity imperatives, the rapid densification of the private realm is something that government, of course, doesn't have as much control over. This strategy isn't about to make a power grab for what happens in the private realm, but it acknowledges that we can't meet our 40% tree canopy cover if we don't look at communicating with and partnering with and cooperating with all of those different landholders across the City of Melbourne. We can't come up with those biodiversity corridors which don't respect property rights. We can't maintain and protect them if we don't develop those linkages with all those various landholders. And it really, for the first time, sets up, I think, at a pretty high level, yes, it is the first strategy of its kind, it sets the framework for those sorts of conversations and those further actions to be developed. That is so important. We can't not do that. It's going to be more and more imperative as we see more development in the inner city. So thank goodness we're here at step one, and like the previous councillors, I look forward to seeing what we come up with after the community consultation.
Thanks, Councillor Leavitt. Any other speakers? Councillor Oak, do you want to close?
Following on from Councillor Ong, and it's not a plug, but at Fed Square at the moment there is a refugium. It's a you can go down and you can make a kokoderma. I don't know if that's how you pronounce it, but basically it is about connecting people to nature and cities, and you can go down and meet strangers sitting around a table and make these beautiful moss-covered plants that are then hanging in the atrium at Fed Square, and it's beautiful, and that is about, you know, that is what urban ecology is about. But I can note that it is a great stress reliever. You know, squashing that moss into a ball is actually really great for relieving stress, and but it's also about, you know, enhancing nature and plants in our city. So yeah, the well-being nature of connecting to our biodiversity should not be underestimated.
Thanks, Councillor Oak. I'll put that to the vote. All those in favour, that is carried unanimously. The next item is Agenda Item 6.4, the Urban Forest Fund Proposal. Would councillors like a presentation? No. I don't think we've got any speakers, so I'm more than happy to move the recommendation on screen. And I call for a seconder. Councillor Oak. So it's a bit of a green night tonight, with even the planning being about a new park. We've talked about the critters and the ecosystem. This one really is, and I think officers for all their work in looking at all the different possibilities, looking at what's worked around the world in similar sort of setups for forest funds, for open space funds, and this is, I guess, firmly aimed really at attracting philanthropic private investment, but it's for those projects which aren't part of the investment profile as it stands. So we spend about $1.5 million each year just on our urban forest strategy, so planting those 3,000 trees a year, as was mentioned by Councillor Leppett about doubling the forest canopy cover. But this is really another step in terms of that engagement which we spoke about with the urban ecology and biodiversity strategy. Indeed, the emailer tree, which, you know, some people sort of think it was a bit quirky, and it was, but it really received global attention. As part of that, it still performs its role of identifying trees that perhaps have been vandalised or trees that are declining. So it definitely performs its role in that respect. But as part of that sort of outpouring of love for Melbourne's trees, there were people that wanted to donate to the urban forest, and there were people that wanted to get involved, so the citizen science side of it as well. So what this will do is actually endorse the establishment of an urban forest fund. It'll be a separate general ledger, as it says up there in the recommendation. It'll be reported upon clearly and transparently in terms of the money that's coming into it. We're also going to look at a third-party charity for those organisations or corporates that require tax-deductible gift recipient status for them to want to donate to the urban forest. And for want of a better term, I call this the Adopt-a-Tree Fund. And, you know, we sort of start this at a very early stage here in City of Melbourne with great support for the urban forest open space already. And indeed, these similar sorts of funds all around the world have had huge amounts of huge amounts of money pour into them. So we don't know what is possible yet with this fund, but I think it's another great step in terms of that ownership, turning the urban forest not from something that the City of Melbourne owns, but something that our residents and our businesses actually own. So it's their urban forest, and this is another logical step in that. So really looking forward to the success of this urban forest fund. Councillor Oak.
Well, thank you, Councillor Wood. I support this motion, the recommendation from management. Thank them for their work in trying to find a solution to the many calls from our community about how they can support our urban forest and how they can contribute. Again, you know, along the lines of the Adopt-a-Tree, and we saw through the drought and then through the development of the urban forest strategy, you know, people asking how they can contribute. But as this paper shows, there are many other reasons as to why people might want to contribute to something that seems like it is council's responsibility, but actually we know that people are well connected to the trees in our community and for a range of reasons and want to support. Importantly, as Councillor Wood said, this isn't about business as usual. This isn't about supporting projects that, of course, we're supporting, and this isn't about diminishing the investment that we make in our urban forest. But importantly, it does set up a process whereby we can accept or explore the support that we are often, support that is often sent to us for greening projects in the city. So I think whilst it seems like it's potentially complicated way of responding to an Adopt-a-Tree program, I think it's important that we get it right and that it has longevity and it's not, you know, a short-term thing. It's something that we've well thought out. So I think that it's a good approach, and I look forward to coming back with the realities of the Urban Forest Fund.
Any speakers against? Any other speakers to Deputy Lord Mayor or Acting Lord Mayor?
Yes, look, I support this motion. I think it's a very innovative way of exploring new opportunities for the city to partner and to be part of the delivery of some of our essential infrastructure. And I think it's thank the officers for coming up with an amazing way of going forward. Thank you.
Thanks, Acting Lord Mayor. Any other speakers to this one?
Yes, Chair.
Councillor Ong.
Based on the experience I've seen of Councillor Mayne being able to raise funds through crowdsourcing, I've nominated him to chair this.
Thank you for that input, Councillor Ong. I'm sure our officers will consider it at length. Any other speakers to the motion? If not, I'll put that to the vote. All those in favour, that is carried unanimously. Our next item is Agenda Item 6.5, Waste Collection in the Central City. Any councillor require a presentation on this item? If not, I call on a councillor to move the motion, the recommendation before us. Councillor Ong, seconded. Councillor Wood, Councillor Ong.
Thank you to Engineering Services for bringing this to us. The waste management processes in the City of Melbourne has been constantly in our mind over the last 6 to 8 years, 6 to 7 years. We've been looking at, I recall when we first started, that waste was something that always in the forefront of our discussion, because back in those days we hadn't started on programs like Love Your Lane Waste, the new waste standards which required the businesses to actually look after their waste bins with locks and identification and cleanliness and pouring waste oil down the drains. All of those things that have progressed over the years, and I commend the team in the engineering services area for bringing it to this stage. We started the compactors program, which I think the first one in the graves, and then the food dehydrator, which has been getting some publicity recently. Councillor Wood, I think I have to commend this council has actually been moving along quite quick. When I go around other municipalities where there's a lot of shops in activity centres, and when you walk to the back lanes of those areas, some of them are disgusting. You know, we used to have it here. I mean, we take example, Bullens Lane in Chinatown, which now is so clean, it is not funny compared to what it was. You know, you wouldn't dare to walk in there in the old days. And this process now, we're actually taking it to set ourselves up to the next stage when the current contract expires in 2019. I think it gives us an opportunity to work with the waste industry to come up with a much better way of managing waste in this city. We've been working with apartment owners and occupiers to improve recycling. We reduce our waste by 90-odd percent, food waste down in the graves. And I think the innovation and the ideas that come up to this council has been actually exemplary. You know, we sit in the Metro Waste Management Group, and we talk. I've been sitting there for 7 years now. And we can talk about little things and not the big important things. I think this is an important thing because we currently have how many? 34 companies operating in the city, or is it 39? 40. It used to have been 50-odd. 40 companies moving trucks around the city, emptying 2 bins here and 3 bins there. Which major city in the world actually operates like that? I think the work that Jeff Robinson and his team has been working on, and the discussions that I had, numerous discussions, we are heading down that path that we might end up with less than half a dozen operating in a city in the future. And that would be good for businesses. It would be good for residents without so many truck movements in and out of laneways and trucks blocking the streets and waking people up at 6 in the morning, even though they shouldn't be emptying bins, but some still do. I think this is a great initiative. Another step forward. I look forward to when we have the new strategies fully in place. Thank you.
Thanks, Councillor Ong. I agree completely. I think amenity is one of the big issues for tackling waste, and you have been pushing this for a very long time, so I'd like to acknowledge your work, and also Councillor Oak. Thank you for reminding me. And I love this solution, and normally we would ask Jeff to break out his slide deck because he's got some pretty impressive images of before and after shots that just show you how successful this program has been. We know they work. We know they're operating successfully in many parts of the city already. This proposal, I think, is a good one. We're talking about one compactor and one recycling hub for commingled recycling for each of the sites that we start to roll out. But I think the other important thing about this is in terms of the waste and resource recovery strategy where this sits, is it has a lot of co-benefits, but we also need to be prudent with council's resources, and what we're going to be trialling here is some cost recovery in terms of a fee for service. And the good news is if you look at the consultation that was undertaken, that there is support for that concept from business. They understand that concept, that things don't come for free. And if we get this right, if we hit the sweet spot where we're still getting a lot of use of the system, but we're able to actually offset some of that cost, then we'll be able to roll out more of these across the city and perhaps head to the nirvana that Councillor Ong is pushing towards, where we've got a lot less truck movements around the city. That's an amenity issue, but it's a huge safety issue as well to have sort of large trucks in and out of the city on regular occasions. But the other thing this does is it actually increases real estate available for our great cafe culture that's popping up all over the place. The De Grave Street success, the pride that the traders have with that project, that's what a sense of community is all about. So, yes, it has really good outcomes in terms of waste reduction, CO2 emissions and less organic waste to landfill. But probably the most positive outcome is how it's brought together over 90 businesses in that precinct, and they're all talking to each other. So things like safety and business spirit and collaborating together and just the marketing potential that comes with that, these are all the things that were generated from a conversation about rubbish. And I think that's a really good thing. So credit to Jeff Robinson and his team for constantly cracking away at each of these issues as they pop up. And they're not easy issues to tackle, and they're certainly not an easy consultation process to undertake when you're talking about siting compactors and commingled recycling. I love the fact that it's an e-card system. This system works really, really well. It's got everything going for it, and there's an education process that takes place for all the users, and our officers are regularly going back to make sure that those people who are signed up to use this are using it in the way that they should, and it's delivering good outcomes for the city. So very happy to support this, and I look forward to seeing the outcomes of what some form of cost recovery can do for widening out this program. Any speakers against? Any other speakers for? You want to close? Councillor Ong.
Thank you. I just mentioned before, but I should have mentioned that Melanie and Gordon and the members of the team there who have been doing all the work over these years, still there, you know, we talk rubbish a lot. The other comment I just want to make, you know, when the introduction of a $5 fee is actually very interesting, considering the first four compactors we put in, we haven't charged for it. While it says that we hope to raise $415,000 out of this, I hope it doesn't, because if it doesn't, it means people are throwing away less stuff, means less trips, which is a good outcome because we want to reduce waste, not increase waste. So I think it's got a very interesting possible outcome with this, that if we are really successful, there's less waste, we get less money, and more reuse and recycling. So great ideas. I'll leave it.
Thanks, Councillor Ong. I'll put that to the vote. All those in favour, that is carried unanimously. And I now hand back to the Acting Lord Mayor, Susan Riley, to take over the rest
Thank
of the proceedings.
Thank you, Councillor. This concludes the reports from management to be considered. There are three items of general business to be considered. 7.1, Notice of Motion, Councillor Oak, Owners Corporations and Related Legislation. I now call on Paul Salter, President of the Victorian Industry Association, who requested the opportunity to address the committee in relation to this matter, to speak for no more than 3 minutes. Please, Paul, would you go to the microphone?
Thank you, Deputy Lord Mayor and councillors. I'll just request one point of clarification in relation to this motion before I speak to my submission, and that was the motion talks about the short-term accommodation industry. It makes reference to the Consumer Affairs Minister's recent bill that was in Parliament, and yet 3.3 goes totally into a totally different area and talks about rooming houses. And I just wanted you to clarify whether I'm confused or is that particular area supposed to be there?
I'm not sure if this is a proper process, but that's kind of the point of the motion, is that while the review is going on, and I can talk to this when I present it, but while there's a review around, you know, amenity issues with regard to the short stay apartment, there's an opportunity that's potentially being missed through these other legislation around buildings, and that could be also addressed. Sorry. So it's the point of it, it's not just about short stay, this motion.
Okay, that's clarified. We just by way of summary before I make the final comment is that the Minister acknowledged that the majority of short-stay accommodation is used responsibly in Victoria. She talked about the fact that the industry contributes $792 million in revenue to Victoria, $160 million in wages, and I don't want to go through that, and 64,000 jobs in Victoria. She talked about the isolated incidents of party pads and unruly behaviour, and I think that goes a long way to probably justify that self-regulation is working effectively in that industry. I believe the most effective method to influence change as far as the council is concerned in relation to amenity and bad behaviour would in fact be to ensure that the parties involved, such as the Victorian Accommodation Industry Association and the Strata Communities Association, that they actually work collaboratively to self-regulate and protect the interests of the owners and the residents in those buildings for the long term, rather than bring in more regulation. And I'm happy to speak to that, but if there's any other questions, that's basically what I wanted to say. The rest is in the submission.
Thank you, Paul. Is there any questions? Yes,
Councillor Ong.
Mr. Salter, you were attending the meeting we had in Docklands not so long ago where this matter was discussed, and Councillor Oak, myself, Councillor Foster and Councillor Watts was. The issue of short stay apartments, now it's been happening short stay apartments have been happening around the city. Some of them are officially called service apartments. Now you run a number of them. I think the issue the council constantly gets representation on is how, as you mentioned, there are some short stay accommodation in some apartment blocks that are poorly managed, which results in the council having to look at this and through the building codes to the building BBA. It's gone to VCAT, it's going to come back, and the reality is this: if self-management of the industry by the various authorities or the various bodies, representative bodies, needs to also bring the OCs close together so that there's a clear understanding of coexistence. Plus, all you need is one or two or three bad practices to create a problem for everyone. So my question to you is, how can that be achieved in terms of your submission that by self-regulation of the Vic AIA and the Strata Communities Associations, but not including the OCs?
Well, the Strata Communities Association represents all the OCs.
So what I'm suggesting is that those two
bodies together would in fact solve the issue. I'm not talking about doing it independently. The Strata Communities Association represents owners' corporations throughout Australia. So what I'm suggesting is both of those parties together address the issue.
I guess the question boils down to, if I drill down further, does the Strata Communities Association, or is it able to be able to bring together all the individual OCs that are facing this? Because not every OCs face this issue. That's the problem.
Correct.
So how do we bring that into this discussion so that we, moving forward, you and other operators don't constantly face this sort of issues from whether the City of Melbourne or City of Port Phillip and other councils?
In answer to that question, I think the most important thing to understand here is that our livelihood is affected by unruly operators. And it's in our interest to see that those unruly operators are in some way stopped from what they're doing. The legislation that's been brought in goes a long way to addressing that issue and probably keeping people that are going to do the wrong thing out of the industry. But in terms of what we could do is, as those two, I'm talking about the owners' corporations and the association, working together and report to you on a regular basis of, one, what we're doing in relation to addressing problems. If you receive a problem, we should be made aware of it and give us the responsibility of either affecting those people, closing them down. And I can assure you the most effective way to stop a rogue operator is to take his business off the websites and he will disappear. So there are solutions, and I think that's the sort of solution that would be way more effective than taking the other confrontational litigation type approach, which can be expensive and is not going to resolve the problem.
I conclude there. Thank you very much. We do have another speaker, and it is Marshall Delvis, the director of We Live Here Movement. 3 minutes, please.
Acting Lord Mayor, councillors, I thank you for the opportunity to speak tonight. The We Live Here movement was formed in December 14, 2015. And in a short period of time, we are now an advocate for over 120 buildings in and around Melbourne, not CBD, not South Bank, not Docklands, but all through Melbourne. And it's all about people having their voice heard. And it's all been brought about by the operation of service departments and Airbnb. My position as the director of We Live Here, I'm also a committee member, an owner occupier of a lot in Docklands, and I'm also the building manager of Watergate Apartments, so I can speak firsthand in regard to the behaviour of short stays. And it's interesting to hear about people who can self-regulate. I, for one, can guarantee you that self-regulation doesn't work. A lot of times the operator is the main offender, won't follow simple building rules, won't agree to the position of the building manager, what's best for the building, disabled access. Most buildings in Melbourne don't have disabled access. They don't have the ability to be able to advise the MFB if they have disabled people in the building. So it all comes back to being able to understand what the building can do and can't do. We certainly like to thank Councillor Oak for putting this motion up. We fully support it. The We Live Here movement fully supports the motion. And I think that the government should go further in their determination. We support the 30-day minimum stay in any residential building. Residential buildings are not designed for short stays. At Watergate, we have six entrances. And the early notification about a service department operator in our building is above a Indian grocer that says whatever the apartment or operator is. And that's how people find, because I get quite often I get calls in the office regarding where do I go to book in. There's no concierge, there's no one there. And I think a lot of buildings around Melbourne that have contacted us in this regard have exactly the same problems. And I've spoken to a number of councillors privately, as well as the Lord Mayor, and most are in agreement, all are in agreement, no one's said otherwise so far. And I think the council should support this motion going forward by Councillor Oakes, and I think that the regulation should be tightened up. For the simple reason is, if an operator comes in and has a number of apartments in a building, they have a tenant come in from interstate or overseas, they might stay for a couple of weeks, or a couple of days rather, and then they might cause a lot of damage, a lot of controversy around the building, and then they're gone the next day. And if they realise when they woke up after a drunken stupor, which has happened in my building, simple thing, ring up the bank, I've lost my credit card, that's the end of the story as far as they're concerned. So, you know, no other service department operator pays any extra dollar, not $1 more to or for the upkeep of the building. And, you know, that probably concludes what I have to say.
Thank you very much. Is there any questions?
Thank you, Marshall. I have a question. What do you think about the legislation that has come in cities like San Francisco, where they've tried to regulate Airbnb, whereby, my understanding, it's about that owner-occupiers can rent them out for short stays through Airbnb.
Thank you, Kat. We are not against Airbnb. We're not against service apartments, providing they're located in the correct places. I think Airbnb have a place in the community, but it's not in residential buildings. It's not up to long-term residents to have to support the tourist industry in this country, in Melbourne. Like, we're the world's most livable city. We're going to end up with slums in these buildings because I understand what Mr. Solder said regarding his organisation, but their rules are meaningless. If we can't, an owners' corporation rules can't be upheld in VCAT, he's got no hope of upholding any rules there. So it's got to be a government decision, and we support a 30-day minimum stay in any residential building. And as I said, we don't have any issues with service departments, Airbnb, but in the correct place, not in our homes. You can't generate a community or do a community in a building when you've got suitcases in and out of the lift all day, people up and down all day, people wandering around wanting to know what they're doing, where they're going. And this happens day in and day out. It doesn't matter how good your operation is, self-regulation does not work.
Thank you. Any further question, Councillor Ong?
Thanks for your presentation there, Marshall. I've asked Mr. Salter a question about how the coexistence of short-term stay with apartments, because if you think about Airbnb, that's even harder to regulate now because they're individual owners who decided that if they're going to be away overseas for a period of time, they can put it on Airbnb, and it's even harder. What we have here is an industry that represented by the Victorian Accommodation, AIA, and then you've got the Strata Owners Corporation. What I'm trying to see is how can industry and the owners corporations representing owners within buildings work together to get something that works, because honestly, I support what's been suggested here, what's been put up, because I was in that meeting too. The difficulty for governments, and I look at it now, in some places like the Gold Coast,
those tall buildings, 90%, 80% are rented out to short-term stay because there are very few people who live there permanently. So I can't see that the state government would actually try to regulate something that actually has a national ramification. So the best, I guess, to you is to consider, is there a possibility from your end to work with the other end and come to an agreed code of conduct? That's the question.
No. No, simple answer is no. If we have a 30-day minimum stay, we're quite happy. But it's not our responsibility to accommodate accommodation in a residential building. Residential means residential, and it's long-term. People that live in those buildings that have to put up with doors banging all hours of the night, all the bad behaviour that comes and goes in these buildings, the suitcases left abandoned in and around the building, contract cleaners coming in and out of the building, no public liability insurance, refuses to provide it. Every contractor comes into my building has to come to my office and sign in, and they've got to state the reason why they're the cleaners for the service apartments refuse to do that. So if anyone gets injured, anyone gets hurt, tax, GST is another thing. No GST. You know, when you're turning over $700,000-$800,000 a year out of a residential building, who's paying the GST? Service apartment operators are not.
Right, thank you, Marshall. I think we might conclude with that and get on with the notice.
Thank you.
Thank you. I call on Councillor Oak to move a motion with respect to the matter.
Thank you, Deputy Lord Mayor. I move the recommendation on the screen, but with a minor change where I'm requesting the Lord Mayor rather than the planning portfolio. No offence, Ken. I'm not right.
Right. I'm calling for Council to second the motion. Councillor Watts. To it, please, Councillor Oak.
Thank you, Deputy Lord Mayor. I won't speak at length because I know that all councillors will probably want to speak on this motion, and whilst it is under my name, I'd like to acknowledge that that I'm sure any of us could have put this motion forward, but in particular Councillor Watts, Foster, Ong and myself were at the We Live Here forum, and this matter was raised by almost, it was, you know, there were 20 questions, I reckon 18 of the questions were relating to, and that's not to exaggerate, but, you know, a lot of the questions are about short stay and about, you know, regulations with respect to apartments in our city. So, you know, bringing that feedback back to council and having discussions with management where they have been providing our submissions to the reviews that are underway, and I acknowledge that when I wrote this and then when it's been submitted, in the intervening time a bill has actually been put to Parliament, and I've proceeded with the motion, noting that bill might address some of the amenity issues, but it doesn't. We don't necessarily know that, and I think it's important that we still continue to advocate, and that's what we said we'd do at the forum, that whilst we have done a lot of work in this space, we spent a lot of money in the Watergate case trying to get change, and ultimately were unsuccessful, the community is still looking at council as a means to advocate on their behalf, and this again is one way of doing that. So whilst I acknowledge with respect to the short stay accommodation, there is a bill in Parliament being debated at the moment, it doesn't necessarily address everything, and it's still important that we support management's approaches with respect to their submissions to the review that was undertaken. But importantly, in response to the question that Paul asked me before he made his submission, and I thank you for providing your written submission. Unfortunately, it only came to me very late in the piece, so I haven't had time to actually read it in great length, but I appreciate you responding. But in response to your question, I said that this bill isn't just about short-stay accommodation. This is actually about a lot of legislation that needs to be changed so that council is not put in a situation that we're put in too many times with respect to safety, health and safety, owners' corporation, you know, regulations that health and wellbeing, the Building Act, Planning and Environment Act. There are a lot of acts that need to be changed with the change of the city, and that a lot of these buildings, need a bit of regulation. It's not about self-regulation at all. We need to have tighter rules and tighter understanding of who's responsible, and it's not good enough that often the responsibility is pushed back to council when it actually needs to be a holistic whole-of-state approach, and it needs to be undertaken by the state government. And I think that too often in this space it is lacking, and we're put into in situations like we have been down at La Crosse Building, you know, where City of Melbourne has performed exemplary, you know, in this situation, dealing with the consequences of, I think, poor rules around rooming houses, poor rules around, you know, occupancy, Building Act, building code, owners corporation. Areas that we have no responsibility for or the ability to change, and yet we are often the ones in that situation dealing with it, and things need to change. And this is an opportunity where we want to support management, we support our officers, support their submissions, not only about short stay, but also about all of these other regulations that need to change. And I think that whilst, yes, there's a bill before Parliament about short stay accommodation, there isn't a bill before Parliament seeking to address all of these other changes. And you know, whilst we're very lucky that we haven't, you know, lost people due to these rules not being tight enough, if they aren't changed, unfortunately that might be the case, and I don't want the city, where we don't have the responsibility, to be seen as responsible where we're not, and the people that who are responsible, the state government, need to take ownership and change these rules accordingly. So I said I wasn't going to speak long, and I have, but I'll move the recommendation, and if others don't speak, I can close. But that is the purpose of this motion, and I move it accordingly.
Thank you, Councillor. Councillor Watts, would you like to speak to the motion?
Yes, I do. Briefly, I'm very pleased that this motion is before us. It's coming directly in response to the our constituents at Docklands. I commend the We Live Here group. This is a vexed issue that needs sorting out, and we don't have the capacity to do it, try as we might at the city. This motion moves to a position where we can advocate on behalf of our constituents, and that is what we are doing. I personally am not convinced self-regulation is working or can work, so I'm very pleased to have an opportunity to put this case to the state government.
Thank you, Councillor. Are there any speakers against the motion? Are there any speakers for the motion?
Yes, Acting Lord Mayor. I'm supporting this motion, understanding that after listening to both the presentations from both the owners of building managers and the operator side, that it is, as suggested by Councillor Watts, it's quite a vex and a complicated issue. You know, at that forum, we didn't just have Docklands people. We had people from South Bank. We had people from the city as well. I have experienced short-stay apartment poor operators going back to 2009 in La Trobe Street, where we had to work with the building owners to try to do something about those things, because other residents are complaining about in and out movements and public storage, public spaces become private storage spaces, things like that. And I think, as I said, I support this. I still feel that the state government hasn't got the guts to actually do something that has larger ramifications. They will do some things that will address some key issues, and I don't think the owner's side will be totally satisfied, and then the operator side will not be totally satisfied either, because in the end, it's a half-pregnant solution. I think while self-regulation has pluses and minuses, it requires both parties to be willing to do things. I know that listening to this, I've been involved from the first day at Watergate when the issues were raised with me, and council took it up to the VBA, and then VBA came up with orders. It went to VCAT or Supreme Court, and recently Supreme Court even ruled that Airbnb could not be considered as a subletting. So the fighting tools that we have are not a lot. You know, we put this forward to the state government, and I just fear the state government will say, too hard, we'll meddle a bit here and there, and nobody wins out of this.
But in the meantime, I still encourage both the industry parties and the owners, managers side to continue to work out some sort of a balance, because okay. Do you want me to repeat that so it gets recorded clearer? Yeah, my accent is a little bit unusual, yes. So I'll leave it on that point, and I support this, but I do encourage both parties to continue the dialogue.
Thank you, Councillor. Are there any other speakers for the motion? Councillor Wood?
Yeah, I'm happy to support this. I agree it's a complex issue, and we don't have all the answers. And further to Councillor Ong's points about Watergate is not only and Councillor Oak's points about people coming to us and really not having the powers, is that it cost us a bucket load of money, of ratepayer money, to support that case as well. So I think that we do need a clearer set of rules that comes to the legislation. I think the bill potentially could answer some of these issues. But I think for me, and this is thinking on the run, so I think that this is a good motion in terms of actually prosecuting the case further and doing some deeper thinking about it, because thinking on the run is not a great thing. But for me, having the owner-occupier sort of element to it, at least there's someone that can be held accountable for, you know, even Airbnb or a short stay situation. So to me, that seems to make sense. And I think that if we tighten these rules up and make them really clear for both sides, that in the end, hopefully that's going to make it easier for operators and certainly the amenity issues for residents, because the thing for me is we've got 80% of residents in the City of Melbourne live in apartments. So this is a massive issue for us, not just from the point of view of, you know, being a huge global destination and needing to provide that extra accommodation, which is certainly an issue as well, but that sense of community aspect to it is really important to council for a lot of the other programs that we roll out. So things like waste management, water management, energy reduction programs all rely on a tower where there is a sense of community, because they're the towers that pick this sort of thing up. So we've got to also think about those sorts of issues when we have a sort of revolving door situation where you can't eyeball someone and talk to them about the amenity and that sense of community spirit that's in their apartment tower.
Thank you, Councillor. Is there any other speakers for the motion? Councillor Leppard.
Thank you, Acting Lord Mayor. I support this motion as well. This is obviously an ongoing issue. It predates this and the previous council. I wasn't able to attend the recent We Live Here event, but I went to their previous event where I was lucky enough to be a guest speaker, and I think I had 10 minutes and I spent the whole time trying to list everything that I thought was wrong with the legislative framework for building and planning in the state, and I had to speak so fast that I'm not sure anyone picked up every word I was saying, but it was an interesting experience. The truth is, of course, as we all recognise, that the thrust of building and planning law and ownership law related to building and planning in this state was written before the donut city was reversed, really. The Hoddle Grid, Docklands and South Bank infill of high-density, large towers which rely on owners' corps to manage themselves is something that came after the thrust, not all, but the thrust of building and planning law came into place. Now, I think that means that at a state level, you've only got three lower house seats worth of MPs out of the 88 that really think that this is a very, very high priority. The other 85 probably won't think it's a very, very high priority. That's because it is a phenomenon which particularly affects very high density, large towers where you have owners' corps, and the recent phenomenon of short stay apartments coming more and more into the private realm and away from hotels has just exacerbated that further. So in the grand scheme of things, it's quite a new problem, and state governments across the country are struggling to make sure that their legislation keeps up with that.
I think that with the release of the bill that we've been talking about tonight, we can agree, and I think we're about to unanimously agree to the motion, that this state government isn't trying to catch up anywhere near fast enough. And the most important thing about this motion, which Councillor Oak has put in, and I commend her for bringing it to us, is that interrelationship between the Owners Corp Act and the various other legislation. None of those acts were really written with Watergate in mind. They were written with other buildings in mind. And the more and more we see, Watergate style or large apartments built in the inner city at very close to each other, and the longer we take to update the primary and secondary legislation in Victorian law, more we're going to see those towers being towers full of individuals who are combatant because of the way the legislative framework is set up, rather than being part of a community, which of course is what all towers in the city should be, ideally. So this is a very general motion, but it's a very important one. I think it is very important that the Capital City Council is urging the state government to stop taking such a narrow approach and re-scope this project and do it properly.
Thank you, Councillor. Is there any other speakers? Councillor Beverley Pinderman.
Look, I'm an apartment dweller and I have been for 35 years. I've never had a problem with short stay tenancies. Probably once with a tenant who was a druggie, but close collaboration with the OC and the owner meant that we were able to terminate his tenancy or have an outcome where his tenancy was terminated. So I'm a little bit ambivalent about this motion, but I do concur with Councillor Wood's comments. It's complex, but it's also complicated. I think the more that the Vic AIA and organisations like yours, Marshall, talk, collaborate, the better it will be. It needs to be that way because really there is not a big problem out there. La Crosse is a huge problem for us, and 3.3 is a critical point that I'll be supporting this motion on. But otherwise, I really, whether you live in a house or an apartment, you can have noisy neighbours, you can have barking dogs, and I just think that it's something where people, if you can communicate and collaborate, much can be done, as has been done in the apartment building that I live in as well. So I will support it, but I just wanted to say that. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor. Is there any other speaker to the motion? If that's the case, I think we've addressed every part of the issues. I now put the motion to the vote. All those in favour, raise your hands, and it's been passed unanimously. Thank you, Councillors. 7.2 is a notice of motion by Councillor Main, Melbourne International Flower and Garden Show, renewal of licence. I now call on John Wickethart of the Carlton Residents Association, who requested the opportunity to address the committee in relation to this matter, to speak to no more than 3 minutes. Please come forward, John.
Thank you for letting me give me this opportunity. I just want to expand on the compaction issue that I touched on in my submission. Compaction's more of a problem in Australia than it is in North America or Europe, where the topsoil may be 20 feet deep. Tree roots only go where there's an oxygen. So it goes in the one or 2 feet of topsoil. And, of course, more difficult to compact 20 feet of topsoil than it is 2 feet. Tree roots don't go down vertically in Australia. They go out horizontally. So if you have trucks going around trees, it's more of a problem than, as I say, in somewhere like Germany or Canada. The other issue is, of course, the Carlton Residents Association is self-interested where it comes to Carlton. We want to protect our amenities, but compared with the Flagstaff Gardens, which I'm acquainted with, which is a well-used park, Carlton Gardens is an extremely well-used park. It's not only Carltonites that use these gardens. It's office workers, it's Tai Chi groups, it's exercise groups, it's especially the wedding industry. So if you stop general use of the gardens for 1 month out of a 12, you not only impact on that use, the flower show, not unsurprisingly, chooses a nice month in which to have its show, so it's more than a 12th of the usage that's cut out. So for all these reasons, I think it's very serious that you're putting trees in danger. I do not know how much danger it is, but you talk to any arborist, compaction isn't good news for a tree. And if a tree dies, a tree can't be replanted in a garden, especially if it's exotic. It's unlikely that an elm planted today will achieve the size and magnificent nature that the elms are in the Carlton Gardens. So thank you for letting me speak, and I hope it's resolved the way I want it resolved. Thank you.
Are there any questions for John? No, thank you very much, John.
Thanks, John. Appreciate that. Just a question about what the outcome that you'd like, though. Is it about the length of the licence negotiation, or you wouldn't want them to be in the gardens at all?
I don't want it in the gardens at all, and the Carlton Residents Association, along with myself, doesn't want it in the gardens at all. And we want it moved to somewhere where it won't have the impact like the showgrounds, where I understand that there's another user of a garden show already using that venue.
So the key thrust, I just want to clarify, is to get the MIFCUS out of the gardens.
That's right. Yep. Exactly right.
Thank you.
Thank you, John. I now call on Councillor Mayne to move a motion with respect to this matter.
So moved, Acting Lord Mayor.
I call on a councillor to second that motion. Councillor Beverley Pinder Mortimer. Would the mover like to speak to the motion?
Yes, thanks, Acting Lord Mayor. This motion resulted from a letter which came from the event owners requesting an early renewal and outlining, I felt, some fairly cogent, well-articulated reasons for that. The strongest being that an event of this scale, one of the five biggest and best flower and garden shows in the world, does take 18 months to 24 months to prepare. So if you ran to the end of the licence and then you had to wait for the acquittals and then you had to do a review, you would have a magnificent event that's run exceptionally well for 21 years, not knowing whether they had tenure 8 or 9 months out from trying to put on one of the five best flower and garden shows in the world. So I felt that it was a very reasonable request, and I think if you just look at the scoreboard in terms of 2.2 million visitors over 21 years, $9 million of economic benefit, 12 training institutions involved, students involved in developing their skills in the horticultural industry, bed nights, tourism, more than 500 people employed on the day, all the marketing for the industry, and Victoria's great reputation as the garden state. It would be a travesty if this council or any future council pulled the rug on a magnificent event that doesn't get any cash contribution from council. So many of the other hallmark events, as defined by Tourism Victoria, such as the Grand Prix or the Spring Racing Carnival, have cash contributions from different levels of government. This show costs $2.5 million to put on, and it self-funds. It gets sponsors, it gets ticket sales, it self-funds, and it's great, and 100,000 people a year go to it. So the proposal is to for a report to come back from management in August, looking at a three-year extension with a three-year option on that, which would take it out to 2023. Management is to outline, if they believe that to be appropriate, the essential terms of any proposed licence extension. And I think by August, all of the acquittals will be in, and management will be in a position to make a recommendation, and the future Melbourne committee in August can deal with it accordingly.
Councillor. Councillor Bibley-Port, would you like to speak? Sorry, Councillor Oak. Thank you. Would the seconder like to speak to the motion, please?
Thank you. I commend Councillor Mayne for bringing this motion up tonight, and it just reaffirms the high quality event, and indeed I think it's been referred to as a hallmark event by the government, by the state government. I have been to it for the last 3 years now, 4 years, and for 21 years, as we know, it has been staged, and it has really been staged very well. And it's brought, you know, it's got high regard from both the state governments and our officers. It is an event, importantly, that supports the Nursery Garden, Nursery and Garden Institute of Victoria, and the Flowers Australia through the VFF, and provides them with something like 11,000 jobs. So that's another reason that I like it. It just supports these two organisations' efforts in promoting the show, but also promoting Melbourne both locally and internationally. There's a huge green space component of the show. There's a 2020 strategy that they've got that is aims at, you know, bringing down the various implications of climate change by 20%. So they're continually reimagining themselves as well, and the from my understanding, the our officers believe that the way that the show has been run and managed is to the highest standards. If there has been any problems in the past, they've been fixed rather promptly. And I really, really do support Councillor Mayne's initiative tonight.
Thank you, Councillor. Are there any speakers against the motion?
Can I ask a question, just for clarification, because I know the managers are here for this. So noting that the licence is valid till the end of the 2017 show, I guess it's a question for Martin Cutter, what would have been the normal approach to bringing this to council other than Councillor Mayne bringing this particular notice motion?
Thank you, Councillor Oak. The process will be the same as we would run for the, I guess, consideration of a new licence if it was considered after the expiration of the current licence. So if this request or this motion gets up tonight, we would obviously proceed to assess the event, bring forward a report about the event over the past...
My question was, if this didn't exist, what was the process with respect to bringing back to council a consideration of the next
licence? Yeah, if this
motion
fails or does not exist, all right, we obviously would wait until the licence has finished and the event takes place in 2017, and we would bring reports back through to council if this event organiser again applied for a new licence.
Yes, we haven't seen the acquittal report yet for this year's event, have we?
Councillor Wong, we don't bring a report back through to council as part of that. We, as management, assess the event every year based on, all the reports that we receive in regards to soil compaction, heritage tree report, and then we make a decision for the event next year. But it's obviously a licence that's ongoing for the 6 years.
Okay. Do we know whether the reports on the soil compacting, because that seemed to be an issue raised, that it's actually not an issue?
Yeah. My understanding that we have received all the reports for this year. Do we know that the answer to that's yes? And okay. It's all fine.
Okay.
I wouldn't mind asking you a question either, Martin. In 21 years, the acquittal has gone through without any issues. So would you be expecting there to be one this year?
The acquittal, it's hard to predict until I've actually seen the final positions, but the view and historically has been over the period of licence that the event organiser has satisfied the conditions of the licence, but I can't predict without seeing those reports what the position is on...
Councillor Watts, I believe it's up to you to speak against the motion.
Well, of course I will. This is very worrying. Thank you, Mr. Cutter. My preference would have been, quite properly, I believe, for us to defer this decision until we have all of the information before us, and perhaps a recommendation from our officers. But we don't have a recommendation. We don't have the information before us. What we do have is, I think, a 4 or 5 page letter from an industry association with not one reference to the people who actually are conducting the event, IMG. Not one reference. We have a series of assertions throughout all of it which are contentious as far as I'm concerned. We have before us a lot of very worrying omissions. I'm very involved with the ambassadors to the Friends, as an ambassador to the Friends of the Royal Exhibition Buildings, so I know full well the position that the museum, for example, is taking about the way in which it will let space in the REB, which is a very important component of this show. And they are not projecting ahead it to the same extent that our particular permission will, renewal of the licence will allow. A discussion has to have to be made around that. The letter that came in from the association talked at length about what a wonderful location it is, and it is. It doesn't talk about the constraints that this wonderful location has on the way in which events are conducted in the garden. And I am very pleased to discover that our officers are in the middle of, I'm not sure at what stage in the process it is, but they're developing a strategy about the way in which events impact or whatever events are occurring in our open space. Very necessary, I would have thought, before we make a decision such as this, a premature decision, in my view. The other thing that I see has not happened is that we haven't consulted with our neighbour, the city of Yarra, which again is very impacted by this particular event. It would have been common courtesy to actually find out what's going on in their minds around before we conduct or we go forward with this. What hasn't happened, in my view, either, is that we can't, at the one hand, say that this is a major hallmark event and not expect the same kind of rigour in analysis that happens in other hallmark events in our city. So I think the City of Melbourne has a bit of a job to do in relation to making sure our governance around this is right. And it's very important, I think, that we step through this. There have been claims in the past that, yes, the use of this particular area is important. It's always had a role in commercial exhibitions. No one's arguing about that. But a couple of things have changed in relation to the south end of the Carlton Gardens, our only World Heritage Gardens. What's happened is a general alteration in the canopy and in the grounds. I was completely gobsmacked to find that our officers are saying things like, oh, yes, we didn't have to repair as much this year as we did last year. World Heritage Gardens, we shouldn't be talking about remediation. We should be talking about improvement. So I'm very concerned that that sort of can-do attitude is applied to our gardens. Yes, let's have it, but and let's fix it up afterwards because we don't have to pay for it. It's a self-funding event. Not a good enough attitude for me. We need a bit of a rethink about this World Heritage site. What were the other aspect that hasn't been dealt with? And I think our submitter actually touched on it briefly. The reality is in the last 21 years, the use of this garden by the public as public open space has, the demand for it has increased phenomenally. It's not rocket science, is it? Look how many people require access to this garden and they are prevented from going there for an extraordinarily long period of time. We've had fights in the past or disagreements about what's appropriate bump in, bump out timing. And I must say it's only because of the community agitation around these kinds of management matters that we've got it in as the way it is now. It is improved on the way it was once conducted, thanks to the vigilance of the community. And of course, that avenue for vigilance is no longer there because the committee has been disbanded. So I am very worried about this. I am worried that on the one hand, this council in the same night can be talking about the Urban Forest Fund, and on the other hand, seemingly ride roughshod over really serious issues in relation to this garden, which is why, and seeking evidence of this, I've been asking for aerial photographs to be taken. There is evidence, the community has presented it, that the south end of the garden looks totally different than the other end. We need to establish what's going on here. The southern end of the garden is in strife. Much as we care for it, much as we invest in remediation, it is in strife. So I'm loath to proceed with this motion, first of all, on the governance area and in consulting widely enough on what's going on here before we commit the new council to an extended licence arrangement in this also. So I'm worried about the site, yes, and I'm worried about other matters as I've described to you. And I've spoken at length. As I said, my preference would have been for a deferral, but that did not meet with enthusiasm when I raised that earlier in the day. So I will be voting against this motion.
Thank you, Councillor. Is there any other speaker for the motion? A speaker against the motion?
Thank you, Acting Lord Mayor. I just want to take a step back because the contributions to the debate so far, including from the submission, have been about whether or not MIFCUS should continue at that very base question. But the question that I want to address here is the governance approaches that we have towards the renewal of licences, full stop. Let's just take MIFCUS out of the question for a moment. It does surprise me that for the first time in this term, and for as far as I'm aware, the first time for a very long time, that this council has decided to, if it proceeds with this motion, to renew a licence without any data in front of it or any analysis of data undertaken by management as to the performance of the holder of the licence in its current term. Now, it surprises me as well that the Chair of Governance thinks that that's the best way to deal with this, but here we are. I think it's inappropriate to preempt those processes, especially when we know and we've been told that those processes are yet to come. The licence performance of the licence holder will be assessed, the acquittals will be assessed, issues around tree compaction, around heritage, around all those other issues will be assessed, and we've heard that management intends on doing that assessment at the conclusion of the licence and bring it back to us. Now, the counter-argument there is that the special consideration here is that a long-term licence holder should be given more notice. Mm. However, if the performance of that licence holder to date has been, as far as management's concerned, satisfactory, in fact, exemplary is the word that's been used today, then surely you don't have to worry too much about the business planning. Surely there's enough predictability in that process that you don't need to make special consideration for each and every operator who says, no, we must have more notice than that. The second governance issue I have here, and it's something that the mover has raised on many issues to date, is that pulling this item forward to before the election is inappropriate when you consider the spirit of our caretaker policy, which it does only kick in that few weeks before the election. But again, this council knows that management will be doing an assessment of the performance of the existing licence holder after this election. And what this motion does is it pulls that entire process forward, cuts out any analysis of the acquittal and says, no, enter into a licence renewal now and we'll deal with the performance issues and the subject to satisfactory performance by August. Again, all of this happening before the election. That's in stark contradiction to some of the other rhetoric we've heard around some other issues from the mover in recent weeks and months. The only other thing I really want to say about this, about MIFCUS itself, and I'm not going to express an opinion on the show other than to say that, yes, I think it does do a very, very good job by and large, but yes, it does take up a heritage, a World Heritage site for a very long period of time, and that is why full due It is inappropriate to circumvent all of that and to just jump on here. So I think the real purpose of this motion has actually already been disclosed, but not in this debate. I think it was disclosed on Councillor Main, your Twitter account, when you first put a copy of your motion linked to it on your Twitter account. Victorians love their flower and garden show in Carlton Gardens, have opted to take on the NIMBYs who want to shut it down. So if that's what it's really about, please conclude the debate by acknowledging that that is the case. But I urge councillors to vote against this. I recognise that there is support from a clear majority of councillors, including myself, for the continued operation of MIFCUS, provided that they comply with the conditions that they need to comply with. But for goodness sake, we need to go through due process. The conditions of that licence are very important. This is a World Heritage site. Let's not preempt that entire process by cutting out the intentions of management to do that assessment in the next term of council. It's inappropriate for us to pull it forward.
Thank you, Councillor. I'd like to speak for the motion.
Can I just make some suggested changes if the mover and seconder are open to that? Is that okay? So where we've got for approval, can we change that to, so in the 1.2, for approval, so for consideration, so down at last bit, 2016, for consideration instead of approval, including the assessment of the operator's performance for 2016. And can I just ask management whether we'll have the reports in time?
The word after consideration should be including.
Including. Sorry, for consideration, including assessment. So change for to including. And can I just ask management whether we'll have the reports, the appropriate reports for 2016 in time? Okay. Is the mover and seconder comfortable with that? So, with those changes, I'd be happy to support this, and I'd speak to it now, if that's okay, Deputy Lord Mayor. So I was a bit torn on this one. I think the consideration of the health of the gardens is absolutely paramount, and I think when you look at the performance of the operator over such an extended period, and even Councillor Watch has acknowledged the enhanced performance of the operator over that period, and when you look at the tree protection zones that have been established in terms of even foot traffic, I'm comfortable as Chair of the Environment that everything is being done that could possibly be done for the protection of those trees. We are seeing a decline in our heritage parks and gardens, but that's actually due to, in large part, the millennium drought that we suffered, where 13 years of very below average rainfall affected particularly our elms and the health of those. So what we will actually see in our heritage gardens and even in Carlton Gardens is we'll actually see a tree renewal program that's occurring right across the city, and indeed some of those much-loved trees will actually be renewed over the coming term. And we have to acknowledge that that's going to occur in some of our beautiful boulevards as well, such as St Kilda Road. That will occur. But we need to ensure that those tree protection zones are properly implemented, and that's why I'd call for consideration instead of approval, an assessment of all the associated reports that were required to make that approval. I just want to pick up on a few points, because I think the submitter's points were well made, but I do have issue just with 2 points. One of those is that half of the Carlton Gardens, indeed the northern part, is available for all round use of residents. And I do think that the use of one of our premier gardens for a major international flower and garden show, which is reputable on the calendar worldwide, is an appropriate use for such a garden. And the submitter has acknowledged, and it's been acknowledged by quite a number of people that I've spoken to, is that the ultimate aim is to get MIFCUS out of Carlton Gardens. So Councillor Leppert is a little bit, not disingenuous, but it's a little bit rough in sort of asking Councillor Mayne to come clean when that side of it is clear from the people who want to remove MIFCUS from Carlton Gardens. I'm Deputy Chair of the Economic Development Portfolio, and I think what we've got to do is balance the use of our parks and gardens with the proliferation of events across the city. And indeed, MIFCUS isn't our actual most impactful event. There are another couple of events which have far greater impact on our open spaces, which are being assessed at the moment. This is part of a wider overall program. So I agree with Councillor Watts, I agree with the submitter. We've got to have the health of our parks and gardens as first and foremost, but we also need to see those parks and gardens as part of the city, delivering the full suite of services and enjoyment to all parts of the city, and also providing, you know, good year-round use for residents for, you know, a major part of the gardens, and indeed the southern part of the gardens for much of the year as well. So I think with those two changes that the mover and seconder have been happy to accept, that I'm comfortable that an event like this should be given the longevity when there is a campaign that is running to remove it from the gardens.
Thank you, Councillor. I also would like to speak to this motion. I think that Melbourne International Flower and Garden Show has had an excellent track record, and I think the people that come there every year and have done for the last 21 years would agree that it's one of our major events that has brings people from rural Victoria, city people. But I think the other part of it is that people, exhibitors that do participate in the International Flower Show have gone on and showcased our city to the world at Chelsea by winning so many awards that have come back to Melbourne and in fact put Melbourne on the map as it is the fifth largest garden show in the world. I don't think it is unreasonable to have the licence renewal looked at this time. I think private negotiations can take place. And I don't agree with Councillor Leppard that this is something that should be left to the next council. We are still councillors until we go into caretaker. So I think the responsibility lays with us to deal with this now, not in the future. Thank you. If there is no further speakers... Well, would you like to?
Yeah, I would like to. Thank you, Deputy Lord Mayor. I don't know. There's many things I could say, and I guess it's not about necessarily tit for tat, but I don't support this motion. I don't think it is actually a question. From what I'm hearing from Councillor Watts and from Councillor Leppard, I'm not hearing that they don't support MIFCUS. I'm hearing that they would like to question or at least have the option to consider the location. And I don't think, despite the blackmail clause that hangs over us in the state government legislation, whereby we're threatened by if we don't continue with this licence in this location, we will have the Committee of Management removed from the state government, and, you know, we will no longer have control over the park. That's always dangled over us, and it's always put out, well, therefore don't question it, don't consider it, don't, you know, ask the questions that we should be asking as a Committee of Management, because if we do even consider a different location, then the state government's going to take the responsibility from us. Sorry, it's just frustrating that you know, we're elected to question and to make decisions, but we are also coming to the end of the term, and I think it is fair enough that it is questioned, the moving of this into a time that we will make it a 6-year decision. And actually, it isn't necessarily appropriate for us when we're constantly told we shouldn't be making big decisions that actually will impact further councils. And this is, in fact, two councils ahead if we're considering a 6-year licence. So actually, I think it is appropriate to question the timing of this. And it isn't about being a NIMBY, actually. I'm questioning it as a responsible councillor elected to make responsible decisions. And on that note, I do like to make decisions with data in front of me, and we don't have anything. This is, yet whilst I understand that there's been an amendment and it's changed to consideration of an assessment, the first part of 1.2 says, in light of request management to enter into negotiations for a new licence. So it's kind of, you know, it's not actually about considering and making a decision in August. You're actually saying in 1.2, let's make that decision for a 6-year licence, but bring it back in August, you know, with all the detail. So I think it's
whilst, you know, people have said about those that are opposed this motion might be NIMBYs, there's actually more than that in my consideration for voting against this. And it's about due process. It's about having the right to make a decision. It's about being having the right to make a decision with data in front of me. And it's not about whether I like MIFCUS or not, or whether I like flower and garden shows, or whether I like supporting the horticultural industry, whether I like supporting more greenery in our city. The 2020 targets, absolutely support. No doubt, no question there. It's about having the ability to make a decision and make it in the right time with the right information. So I don't support this, and I, quite angry that it's in front of us.
Thank you, Councillor. Is there any further requests for speaking? No? I will now put... I'm so sorry.
Thanks, Acting Lord Mayor. Look, I'd start by reminding councillors what happened in Yarra Park, where an asset of state significance, which the state has a huge interest in, we took a position which was not arguably favouring events and activity, and we were kicked out. We were kicked out. Special legislation. So we're now, what, one member on some advisory committee, have no political influence at all over Yarra Park. So when Councillor Oakes says this is dangling over us, there's a very, very large precedent where this has actually happened. And when you've got bipartisan support from Labor and Liberal for this event in these gardens, we know that exactly the same thing would happen if we pulled the rug. So when you've got a very determined but small local group who want to kick this event out and argue for a different location and a different operator... different operator to the peak body for the garden, you know, horticultural peak industry body. I don't know who that body would be. That they deserve some certainty. So this motion, and I accept it was possibly a little bit too enthusiastic. I accept that. It's been improved with Councillor Wood's amendment. But councillors, think about what happens. This triggers a decision in August. In August, we make the actual decision. So whilst the language might have been enthusiastic, and Councillor Leppard can quote Twitter and talking to Jeff Kennan on Twitter and things like this, he knows that this is just setting up the real decision for August. And for those who are worried about making six-year decisions, major decisions that don't cost us anything, yeah, it's just another event at that level. This is not a $100 million investment in a new building in Little Collins Street, which is what I would call a major decision. This is a licence that costs us nothing. Yes, it is a major event. It's a hallmark event, and it's the only hallmark event where we are the stewards of it. And so when we talk about we should make them wait until after the event, I mean, does the MCG, do they wait until the last grand final before they do a new deal? I mean, the Australian Open's on a 30-year contract. The tenure that you need for major events, I mean, show me another major event around the world which waits until 9 months before the next event before they actually go, oh, yeah, you can go again, particularly with a track record as successful as this one. So I only moved this motion after receiving the letter, the nine-page letter, not a four-page letter, the nine-page letter that came in from the peak body, and I then chaired the Open Space Committee and listened to the debate when Councillor Watts presented a large number of pictures of this disaster which had unfolded, and this was very readily dismissed by virtually all members of that committee, as I was there, Councillor Watts, you weren't, and it was quickly dismissed after I raised it, after being requested to raise it. Then I heard from the officers that the reports had come in saying that it was all fine, and there was a quote given about the previous year there'd been 400 metres of turf replaced, this year it was only 260. So I wasn't just taking a leap in the dark saying, let's just do this on no data. I mean, it was a relatively informed motion. So I hope that we can take all of this into account when we vote tonight to simply bring forward a decision to August. And if there is a legitimate question about timing and making six-year deals 3 months before an election, if that's the case, in August, kick it forward to November. Fine. Kick it forward to November. You can choose to do that in August. If you want to make it an election issue and then have this going then, you can do that. But by voting against tonight, you're saying You want to stick with a system where you think this operator, this industry, deserves to have a tenure issue hanging over them with their record and have to wait 9 months before they know what they're doing, when all other major events in this town, this great events town, have much better tenure arrangements. And remember what happened in Yarra Park, which could yet happen in Royal Park if we don't respond on issues like car parking access with the Netball Centre and with the zoo, which is a live issue coming up now in the future for this council. So we have to be pro-event in major parks or we lose them. And I think that this is an issue where we need to be responsible and we need to bring this forward decision and bring this decision forward and then make the main decision in August. But let's just call for the reports by voting in favour tonight and then we can have an informed debate in August.
Thank you, Councillor. I think at this point I'd like to put the motion to the vote. All those in favour of the motion, please raise your hands. Councillor Wood, Councillor Ong, Councillor Pinder Mortimer, Councillor Main, Councillor Louis. All those against the motion, Councillor Lippert, Councillor Oak, Councillor Foster and Councillor Watts. The motion. ...7.3, Notice of Motion by Councillor Main, AFL Football Clubs Gambling Reform. There are no speakers to this motion. I'd like to call on Councillor Main to move a motion with respect to this matter.
So you're calling with support, are you leaving?
Is that what you want?
Thank you.
I'd like to move an amended motion, which appears on the screen. The amendments recommended by my friend councillor, my friend on this one, councillor Oak. So moved.
I'll move so it. I'll second it.
I call on a councillor to second the motion, councillor.
Just with one.
Well, let's read it first.
Minor amendment. Just lose the word losses, at the very last word.
I second that.
Yeah. Councillor Oak has seconded the motion. Would Councillor Main like to speak to it, please?
Yes, thanks, Acting Lord Mayor. This is an issue where Australians are the world's biggest gamblers per capita, with more than $10 billion a year lost on poker machines, and problem gambling being a major issue in our community as the world's biggest per capita gamblers. And the largest incidence of problem gambling occurs in the poker machine space because Australian machines are highly addictive, high-intensity machines. And unfortunately, we've had a situation emerge where the spread of these machines has reached into many of our most venerable institutions. I know other institutions like the RACV got into the pokies and got out, But the AFL unfortunately has gone in quite heavily through their constituent clubs, and now if you read the appendix to the report, there are nine Victorian clubs with 1,363 machines bleeding close to $100 million a year out of the unfortunate players of those highly addictive machines. So Productivity Commission estimates have said that up to 40% of revenue comes from problem gamblers. So that's $40 million a year of that $100 million coming from people who are addicted to machines which are designed to trap and addict. So this motion follows on a recent council decision to join the Alliance for Gambling Reform, which is a peak body involving a range of groups but quite a few councils. And people who are not addicted to the revenue. So the state government cannot deal with this issue because they're addicted to the revenue, over $1 billion a year. So it really is up to local government to step up. We get none of the revenue, we have to pick up the pieces from poker machines. And when the AFL is the richest sporting code in the country, and even, you know, clubs in WA, I mean, the Eagles and the Frio, they're banned. They can't have pokies. So it's quite an unlevel playing field as well, when you consider that. So I understand that the AFL was close to trying to exit pokies 3 or 4 years ago during the Wilkie-Xenophon-Gillard negotiations. And there's been quite a bit of media in the Herald Sun recently. And I did attend a rally on Saturday at the Hawthorn-Melbourne game and was surprised in the rain how many people stopped to sign the petition. The fans do not like it. You know, Hawthorn, $22 million a year.
Their fans do not like it. This issue is resonating, partly because the Herald Sun is running it so hard at the moment. And I think the fans want them out. And we're not conflicted. We're independent. We can be strong. We have partnerships with the likes of Carlton and Richmond and North Melbourne, and there's one coming up with Collingwood. And the very excellent amendment, which I know that Councillor Oak will speak to, is that when we do enter into partnerships with AFL clubs, that we potentially structure them in a way that will give them incentives or encouragement to exit. So that might be called the Collingwood Clause, item 1.5 there, as we are contemplating a 10-year agreement at $300k a year for access to some of their facilities. And I don't know what the detail of this might be, but you might pick a pivot point at 5 years for a review, hoping to see some good practice in terms of exiting the poker machine industry. So we can be brave. It's excellent that the CEO has stepped up and agreed to write the letter, which is terrific. Don't want an individual councillor doing that. So or was stepped up, but it's good that he's there. And I thank Councillor Oak for both seconding the motion and for her excellent Collingwood clause at the bottom there.
There's no
Councillor. Councillor Oak, would you like to speak to it?
Well, I support this resolution that you brought forward, Councillor Main, wholeheartedly, and I also thank you for, you know, asking us to support the Alliance for Gambling Reform and also for the, you know, supporting the Love Footy, Hate Pokies campaign on the weekend. And I particularly like item number two, where you commend the North Melbourne Football Club for being the only AFL-based, only AFL club based in Victoria that has no... well, we're not poor when we're on top of the ladder right now, but that's not what it's about. But if a North Melbourne Football Club can get out of pokies and actually be, you know, returning to quite good financial position, then, you know, surely Collingwood can. But that's, again, the item 1.5 actually isn't just about Collingwood. It's about, you know, when we put recommendations forward on any matter, you know, I believe that we need to be seeking a solution, you know, to whatever this, whatever the action that we're seeking at council, we should be also seeking a, you know, solutions where there might be a barrier. And this is an opportunity whereby where we support AFL clubs, and we have done so in the past, and we might in the future, Collingwood or otherwise. I think that this is an opportunity where we can actually try to get some change. It might not mean anything, or it might not actually get change, but at least we should try. And where we don't have control over the number of pokie machines in our municipality, where we don't have control over, you know, the licences that are awarded, well, this is a small little thing that we can do in supporting our policy effectively tonight, that we don't support you know, the reliance on poker machines, and therefore we should include it as a condition where in any partnerships that we might enter into the future with AFL clubs. So I support this, support the campaign, support Councillor Mann in bringing all of this forward, and definitely support us seeking ways of executing this other than just through the Alliance, and one of those is through conditions on our support for AFL clubs.
Councillor, are there any speakers against the motion? Are there any further speakers for the motion? Councillor Leppard.
Thank you, Acting Lord Mayor. Just briefly, yes, I like it when we're all friends again. Thank you, Councillor Main, for bringing this to us. Councillor Main has been a strong advocate for us joining the Alliance, and I thank him for that first step in the process. This motion is an excellent addition to that, including as well the amendment that Councillor Oak has suggested, which I think is a very good one. Gone through all your tweets, Councillor Mann. I can't find anything wrong on this matter, so very good. But in all seriousness, thank you for bringing this to us, I think we are stepping up here, and we're doing that in a way that we haven't for the rest of this term, and let's see what comes of it. We're taking leadership here, and I'm very glad that we're doing that, so thank you to the mover.
Thank you, Councillor. I'd like to put the motion to the vote. Oh, sorry, I didn't see you. So I beg your pardon.
It's okay. Is it me? May I?
Yes.
Yes. I think this is a very good motion too. I enthusiastically support it. I think it actually demonstrates that the City of Melbourne is stepping up to the plate, and to use a sporting metaphor, and we are demonstrating good behaviour to the whole sector.
I think we can, if only this kind of aspiration could spread throughout any business arrangement we enter into with organisations making money out of pokies. So I commend Councillor Main.
Thank you. Councillor Ong, would you wish to speak?
Yes, Acting Lord Mayor. I totally support this, and I thank Councillor Main for bringing in and the improvements that Councillor Oakes has put in. I think it's worth to note that this is actually consistent what with the City of Melbourne's doing probably last six, seven years, through planning even, when we had applications to bring planning applications through the VGCLR and through the City of Melbourne for extra poker machines in certain venues in the city, which we fought in VCAT and won. So this is consistent. The other comment I'd like to make is that in the last few years, City of Melbourne put $2 million towards North Melbourne, $2 million towards Carlton at Princes Park, and $2 million towards Richmond. And it's notable for those North Melbourne supporters that North Melbourne's the only club that actually don't have poker machines, while Carlton and Richmond still do. So I think it's appropriate that the City of Melbourne, which has been contributing towards those clubs, that we bring this forward and send them a clear message that we hope we would like to see them exit this and achieve what this council's policy and direction is. The only other comment is that I also support this motion from a perspective it helps Councillor Main achieve his 50 target of norms.
Councillor, if there are no further speakers, yes, there is. Councillor Foster.
Thank you, Deputy Lord Mayor. Councillor Ong, you took the words right out of my mouth. Anything I can do to support Councillor Main in his stated quest of achieving 50, wasn't it? 50 past motions, well, I'm happy to do that. As Councillor Main and others know, I've worked across human services, community development, and, of course, legal services. I still work in legal services. And in each of those sectors, I've seen the results of problem gambling manifest and manifest extraordinarily at times, whether it's contribution to family breakdown, its contribution to criminality, to unmanageable consumer debt and the cycles that that brings. It manifests everywhere. And I think Councillor Oakes pointed, you know, I don't blame you at all, Councillor Oakes, for pointing out the one club that we have in the municipality that does very well at avoiding making any contribution to problem gambling. Look, they ought to be, I'm not a North Melbourne supporter at all, but they ought to be commended. And it's worth mentioning too that they are returning to a really strong financial position without a reliance on gaming. Without a reliance on gaming. It's setting a great example for what other clubs can do. So look, I welcome this. I welcome this motion, wholeheartedly support it, because anything that we can do to encourage other clubs, local or otherwise, to follow suit ought to be done. So on this one and this one alone, Councillor Main, I'll commend you for it and wholeheartedly support it.
So there was something wrong with the other 49 motions?
Where would you like me to start?
I think at this point we should be able to put the motion to the vote. All those in favour, please raise your hands, and the vote is unanimous. Thank you. This concludes the items of general business for consideration. Are there any urgent business? Any proposed urgent business? No? At this point, there's a 15-minute period we provide for members of the public that would like to ask questions. Should not be greater than 90 seconds in duration. I now invite any member of the public to ask a question. Yes, please come forward and state your name at the mic.
Well, Deputy Mayor and all the councillors and the CEO and all the remaining City of Melbourne workers. I'm coming here on behalf of my family and family trust. We had a property in North Melbourne and has been prosecuted by your council staff. We had this situation going on 4 years. And last year, in 26th of June 2015, I remember in that town hall, I have participated in the forum called the Public failing justice forum, I actually met Councillor Steve Wang and CEO Ben Riemann as well. 1 year behind, 1 year had passed. That thing hasn't gone any further for us, and it's going to other ways. So it's really I sent an email recently. My friend helped me to send an email to two councillors today, and we didn't get a response. We're actually requiring for a transparency of the council operating, and also
I'm not sure what the question is or what the issue you are talking about, and which councillors did you email today?
I emailed to Councillor Frost and Councillor Wang. My friend helped me to email. We're actually requesting for some document, something. So basically, what I'm trying to say is our family had a very critical situations, and we've been back to the corner, and it's really we just want to find out where the justice is, and it's for the integrity, accountable, and respectful. So,
Could we please just take this offline and try and work through the issues that you have, and perhaps as you have already spoken or emailed to two of the councillors, we would like that so that we understand what the problem is that you're having with council.
I just saw Mr. Paul Sorter was here and he left, and I know that he had a case that run in the Supreme Court, and the council and himself have thrown about $1 million into that court case. So as one of the council councillor just said, that a bulk of good money has just thrown away, and we are in the same situation. We're not in the short accommodation stuff like that, but we are in that same situation that we probably will pushed us already. In 1 year, we're trying to lodge an appeal at the county court, and your staff was just against us, and we have gone nowhere at all. So I'm actually just want to find out, one, I respect the council's lawful right, but I hope my lawful right has to be, and our family's lawful right has to be recognized and respected as well. So we do need to request the lawful way to access the documents, because at the moment my name, Jennifer Lee's name, if ring in the council, that they will know it's from me. So I've been blocked for FOI, I've been blocked a lot of things.
Deputy Lord Mayor, if I may. Thanks very much for your question. It sounds like you've got a fairly complicated issue on your hands, and also sounds like it's myself and Councillor Main who you have emailed today. I can't speak for Councillor Main.
Not today, a few days ago.
A few days, right. I haven't yet seen that email. It may have been referred to officers. But in any event, it also sounds like you've got litigation on foot, so we're not going to be in a position tonight to address your query directly.
Yes, we're not.
Tell you is that email will be actioned as per the normal course of things, and you will get a response, and we will get some feedback from officers for you as soon as we can.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you.
I wish to thank
There's
members.
Question.
Oh, beg your pardon. God, I'm... Yes.
Sorry, I knew you were going to go straight into it. Further to my question on 250 Sturt Street, I've been mulling it over and stuff like that. Under such circumstances where it's now changed from the responsible authority from the minister to the council because of the negotiations, would it not be possible for this council to say in those negotiations, sorry, it's now our responsibility, it's been rejected, put in another application back to council, we will hear it as per the normal process? Is that not something that could be... is that you must negotiate an outcome even though the responsible authority will change?
If I
could maybe explain, and come, Jeff Lawler could clarify. Normally, if it's a, what they call a compulsory mediation, which WECAT calls the parties together.
Which it was, yep.
Right. And the resultant negotiation, which then is endorsed and signed off by WECAT, we can't say. But if, for example, that the actual proposal is knocked back totally, and then they come in with a new application which is below 25,000 square meters, then it comes to us. And that it applies at number 30 Russell Street or something, remember? The Forum and the MTC building, when it got knocked back, it came back as a hotel alone below 25,000 square meters, which is now currently under our RA. So, but if the WECAT decision in the compulsory meeting was that this is what all parties agreed to and the applicant's happy with that, they make the ruling, we don't have delegated powers to make changes to it.
I suppose my point is, do we have to agree to it in the WECAT? You don't have to agree. There's a negotiation. You negotiate, but the outcome wasn't there.
So, the only point is if officers are taking a position where they're agreeing to a settlement, then there are examples where that can be called in. But if it's just a VCAT decision, well, it's a VCAT decision, and that will never come back here. So I think that would be the two possibilities there. I'm not sure what the actual detail is as to whether there was an opposite position. It sounds like it was more just a VCAT decision, and therefore, what can we do?
It's been hard to get the detail, trust me.
The permit will be obviously public.
And it is public. I've seen the permit.
Yeah, so you've got the permit, and all you're wanting to see is the legal argy-bargy.
That's right, I suppose. We're just trying to avoid this happening again in the future, because obviously it's not a good feeling from the residents' perspective.
Which I think Councillor Ong has agreed that that's an issue, and he's undertaking discussion on that issue. So
yeah, no,
I think
great.
That answers it.
Thanks. Thank you.